Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Richard Turley's book, Massacre at Mount Meadows, was published in 2011. He and Barbara Jones Brown are working on the sequel of that. The first book ended at the massacre itself. The second book will focus on the trials of John D. Lee and the aftermath of the massacre. So I'm looking forward to it. We're going to get a little bit of a sneak peek as Barbara and Rick talk about this. Barbara's my guest host. This was actually recorded last year for the Mormon History Association meetings in June of 2020. So it's going to be a great conversation. You won't want to miss it. Check it out.
One of the other interviews that we've shared together was in 2004, I believe, when MHA was in Provo, Utah. And before I went down to attend the conference, my husband, who's an editor for the Deseret News, suggested, hey, you ought to write a freelance article for the Deseret News about this book that's being written about the Mount Meadows Massacre. And there's three authors down there who will be presenting, Ron Walker, Glenn Leonard, and Rick Turley. Why don't you go to the conference and see if you can get an interview with one of them? And I had interviewed you over the phone many times before that, but never met you in person. And so I remember I had the opportunity to meet you at MHA, and I was very nervous when I asked you if I could have an interview with you about the book you were working on. And you were so kind and congenial, and it was such a great experience for me to be able to interview you at that time. And it resulted in an article in the Deseret News about Mountain Meadows. Little did I know that someday I would end up working with you on that project. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the origin of that book. What was it that led to your writing Massacre at Mountain Meadows?
As someone who was highly interested in church history and then ultimately became the managing director of the church historical department, I, of course, knew about Mountain Meadows early on in my life. And I had read Juanita Brooks' book on the subject. So I had a natural interest in it. When the Encyclopedia of Mormonism was being put together, I wrote an article on the Mountain Meadows Massacre with Ron Esplin. And so that was sort of my first foray into writing about it. That article came about the same time, the writing of it, about the same time that the church began working with descendants of the victims of the massacre and the perpetrators to put together a monument, first of all, up on a hill overlooking the Mountain Meadows, and then a later one, 9 years later in 1999, down in the bottom near where the victims were under siege before they were killed, all before the last part of the massacre occurred. And so I had been involved in that monument building in my role as the managing director of the church historical department. But the person who had the main role at that time was Glenn Leonard. Glenn was the director of the museum division of the church historical department. And so he was the one that interacted mostly with the descendants of victims and perpetrators and working on all of that. So as the research into the Mountain Meadows Massacre grew over time and more people became interested in it, there was this sort of renaissance of writing about the topic. Juanita Brooks had done her job, but now there was this flurry of writing about the Mountain Meadows Massacre. And so the thought occurred, well, we ought to write our own book about that topic. And so I talked to Glenn, and the two of us decided to work on the book together. The people in the old history division that went to BYU and became the Joseph Fielding Smith Institute was a group with which I had established a relationship, particularly because of Ron Esplin. Ron Esplin had succeeded Leonard Arrington as the director of the Joseph Fielding Smith Institute. And he and I talked often about projects that we could work on together. We had meetings together. And in a meeting where Ron Walker was present and we were talking about church history, Ron said, you know, we ought to write a book about this topic. I sort of logged that in my mind, and I called him later and I said, Ron, we are working on a book on that topic. Would you like to join us? So that's how Ron and I and Glenn became involved. And of course, ultimately, we needed other people to work on the project. We needed researchers, we needed editors. And so at one point, there was an opening for an editor, and that's when you applied for the job, and we hired you.
Actually, it's a little bit different than that. Okay. I had submitted a resume to Elder Marlin K. Jensen 6 months before, just saying, hey, if you ever need any freelance editing, I'm really starting to become interested in church history, and give me a call. And he gave me one project, editing a manual for the Family History Library. And then I didn't hear anything else for months. And then all of a sudden I received a phone call from you to come in and interview. And I was kind of hesitant by that time, but I said, okay, I'll go in for the interview. And the rest is history, so they say. Do you want to talk about that interview and then more about the book?
Sure. I mean, at the time we were working on the book, we were very optimistic about the schedule, as scholars often are. You know, sometimes we take on a project and we think, well, this will be done in a few months or a few years. As it turned out, that project, which we started around 2000 or 2001, it didn't wrap up until 2008. And because we actually divided the project into two parts, a first part and a second part, it's actually continued to this day. So on the first volume, because your skills as an editor were in high demand for this project, you did a tremendous amount on the book. In fact, I've got this copy of the book, Massacre at Mount Meadows, that was inscribed to you by Glenn and Ron and me. And Ron put this inscription in, which I think reflects the feelings of all three of us. It says, "Every page shows our debt to you. With warmest appreciation, Ronald W. Walker." So you played a major role in that. So when the book was published, and I was continuing to work on the next volume of the set, you and I were working together on it in an editorial sort of role, and then ultimately became co-authors of it. So we're still working on it. For those who remain interested in the topic, I will say for this audience that the draft of the book is done, but as was the case with the first volume, it's too large to meet the page count for Oxford. So Barbara and I are currently working on trimming it down to get it within the page count so that it can be published, which we hope to do by the end of this year.
Great. Well, I for one, am really grateful I had that interview, that professional interview with you, and grateful for the opportunity I had to work on this project. It led to my going back to graduate school and getting a master's degree, and really has affected my life. So the whole Mountain Meadows project was so meaningful on so many counts. I wonder if you could talk more about the reconciliation process that took place as a result of the book, and about the 150th anniversary when Elder Henry B. Eyring read an apology. Just talk more about that, and then ultimately achieving National Historic Landmark status for the Mountain Meadows.
So writing about the Mountain Meadows was one part of what I think needed to be done with the topic, but more than that, I think relationships needed to be built and more needed to be done, particularly to recognize and reflect the pain of the descendants and other relatives of the victims of the massacre, as well as to have a kind of catharsis for many of those who were descendants of participants in the massacre. As I mentioned, that sort of relationship had begun in the late 80s, early 90s, and it continued. Ultimately, three groups developed to represent those who had been victims of the massacre, and those three groups worked together at times, at other times they worked independently. But ultimately, one of the groups, the group that was the Mountain Meadows Monument Foundation, put together a group of proposals that were presented to the church suggesting that the church consider having the Mountain Meadows become a National Historic Landmark. And that proposal was accepted, and all three of the groups worked together with the church in having that National Historic Landmark recognition occur. When the meeting occurred that you mentioned with the then Elder Henry B. Eyring of the 12, at that time now of the First Presidency, the purpose of that meeting was in part to read a statement on the part that had been drafted and signed by the First Presidency, expressing several things simultaneously. One was their profoundest regret that the massacre had ever occurred. A second was an expression not only to the victims of the massacre, but also to the native peoples who had been blamed, who had been scapegoated for, you know, being the primary cause and participants in the massacre, which simply was not the case. And so I think that was a watershed moment in many ways. Another watershed moment was when the National Historic Landmark recognition occurred. We went to Washington and we made a presentation before the committee that has to make the first recommendation on that. We had some consultants that we had hired to help us get through a very complicated process of paperwork. And then we made our presentation to the committee. It was interesting. I sat and watched this, and you sat and watched this. And many of the proposals that were made that day to the committee were sent back for further work. In the case of National Historic Landmark status for the Mountain Meadows Massacre historic site, it was accepted on the first go-through, which I thought was a wonderful thing. And then ultimately we had a ceremony at the Mountain Meadows, and representing the Department of the Interior and the Secretary of the Interior was the director of Zion National Park, who came and presented the plaque to recognize Mountain Meadows Massacre National Historic Landmark as an official part of the federal system in recognition.
Yes, that was truly a great day, and I have so many wonderful memories of all of these events that you talk about in that reconciliation process and all of the good things that have come about from our researching and writing about Mountain Meadows, the Mountain Meadows Massacre.
I do want to say one more thing about that, and that is, in order for that National Historic Landmark recognition to occur, there had to be a lot of contiguous property covering the area where the massacre itself had occurred. National Historic Landmark status is rarely granted to parcels that are separated by great distance from each other. And so over the course of time, beginning in the 1990s and proceeding up to that time, the church and a lot of people working at the church spent a lot of time and effort negotiating with landholders in the area in order to acquire property necessary to be able to present the area in essentially the same type of state that it was in at the time that we acquired the property. Obviously, there were changes that were made between the time of the massacre and then, but what we could see happening is we could see that development was coming. You know, St. George was not that far away. People looked at the Mountain Meadows as a potential area for vacation homes. And so we saw a lot of development proposals that went in that were going to divide up the Mountain Meadows into, in one case, small ranchettes, in another case, a little bit larger ranchettes. And it would have destroyed the view shed between the monument that we had built on the hill and the monument in the valley, as well as divided it up so that it would not have looked anything like what it was at the time of the massacre. So I think the acquisition of that property over time and the preservation of it laid the groundwork so that when National Historic Landmark status was ultimately sought, we were able to acquire it and put together something that is definitely worth visiting.
Yes, I have so many great memories of all of these events that you're describing, and it was such an honor to be part of all of that and the reconciliation process and the producing of this book. And I'm really excited for our book two in the series to come out soon. And again, I've enjoyed working on that project as well.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Barbara Jones Brown and Richard Turley. In our next conversation, Barbara asked Rick about his efforts to promote LDS voices in Mormon history.
And in addition to that, we wanted women to be reflected in the history of the church. Traditionally, in the United States and in many parts of the world, history had been written from a male perspective. We wanted history to be written from a women's perspective. So that led over time to the creation of women's history, part of the church history department, and women who were hired to write that. I can think of, you know, many who fit into that, you know, Kate Holbrook, Jenny Reeder, Lisa Tate, and others.
Thanks for listening to Gospel Tangents. I really appreciate it. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without interruptions. Also, we've also got transcripts available, like these here, that are available on Patreon as well as on our website. So to get those, just for $10 a month, you can subscribe and hit the yellow subscribe button. We've also got paperbacks like these. If you want to get those, you can get those at Amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview and you can get the paperback versions. Or we've also got subscriptions on those as well. And if you subscribe on our website, I'll send those to you as soon as they're finished automatically. Don't forget to get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to tweet at us at gospeltangents. Of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And please give us a 5-star rating for those of you who listen to audio only. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.